So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
It is the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX, and the last time we checked in on the International Festival, which or the Festival of Nations, which takes place because of the International Institute of St. Louis, that was a few months ago, and they were concerned about whether or not the Festival of Nations would go on as planned. It is going to, August 23rd and 24th. And to discuss it with us, Blake Hamilton is the interim CEO of the International Institute of St. Louis with us now in studio. How you doing, Blake?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
So congratulations, first of all, on getting this done, that it's going to happen. With the uncertainty from weeks and weeks ago, how do we get to the point where we now know it's going to go on?
Well, we're really able to do this event every year because of the number of volunteers and the amount of community support. And this year, that really, we've seen folks step up in incredible ways. And once, I think, a lot in the community, a lot of folks in the community who really value the festival really saw that this was a really at risk of not happening, that they really wanted to show their support. And we're thankful that they did. And we're really happy to have a large number of sponsors who really stepped up early to help ensure that this festival can continue to go on.
Was the primary reason that the Festival of Nations was in limbo because of the federal cuts to the staff at the federal cuts to funding and thus the staff at International Institute?
Well, certainly. Delays in receiving funding really put us in a critical position when it came to our available cash. And of course, our primary focus is the services that we provide to refugees and immigrants. The opportunities that we create for folks to thrive. And that is our mission. And so we didn't want to distract from our mission and knew that the cash reserves that we had needed to be devoted to service and really cause us to think, well, you know, the festival is really a great resource for the region, but we have to really focus on our core mission. But, you know, due to some of those funds being reimbursed to us and what we were owed by the federal government kind of coming in over the course of the last few months, really it's put us in a much better position. And again, with sponsors and folks stepping up saying that they want to see this happen, folks volunteering to assist with organizing and putting it on, you know, we're being given the capacity and support in the way that makes us comfortable being able to move forward with it. And we're really happy to do so.
So when you only have so many resources, you can't do everything. You said your primary focus or your primary mission you wanted to focus on, weren't sure you can do the festival this year. Was that interrupted in any way? Your main duties as an organization, how much was that interrupted, if at all?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, again, not having access to the funds that enable us to provide the services that are really important, connecting people to employment, getting kids enrolled in school, providing health and wellness support to families. All of those are really at the center of what we do, providing education. And those programs and services were certainly at threat with not having the funding that was really dedicated to performing that. We invested our own resources in ensuring that those could continue and get us through until we did start to see federal funding again. But we had to necessarily scale back. You mentioned we had to engage in furloughs, and that was really challenging for us as an organization to know what we can do and then suddenly not have the resources to be able to do it. We did see federal funding cuts to programs such as refugee resettlement, which is still not back online. We've seen cuts to our citizenship program, which provided classroom education for refugees and anybody who's on the path to citizenship to learn about civics. I always say, who is most capable of passing the citizenship test? It's really like a fifth grader who's mm-hmm. just taken a civics course, right? It is that information that is about our democracy and how this country operates in our history that is critical to being able to pass that test. And we had received for nearly 20 years funding to provide that sort of education to immigrants and refugees who are on that path. And that funding was terminated. We were very thankful that we had volunteers who've been connected to that program for nearly a decade, who came to us and said, we understand that there's no funding for this program, but we feel like we're capable of seeing it through with this cohort. And it's really that sort of dedication and commitment from the community that really enables us to march forward with our services. And that same type of commitment is helping us ensure that we do have a Festival of Nations this year.
I know there's a lot of confusion regarding the United States and how welcoming it is to immigrants right now. But let's focus on St. Louis and the perception. Is St. Louis among the community of immigrants who are finding a place to make their new home? Is it more St. Louis is a dangerous city with high crime rates, or is it St. Louis is a great place for immigrants? Where are we with that?
St. Louis has a reputation for being very welcoming. I mean, there's a number of amenities and resources. It isn't just the International Institute, but many others that are serving immigrants. And we have the Office of New Americans here in the city and very welcoming policies that really support immigrant business development as well. And those are all key factors in attracting folks to our region. Of course, the region isn't without its challenges and its reputation that causes pause to some. But those who come here and are able to establish themselves and their families and find a safe place and a place where they can get a job that makes ends meet and helps their families thrive, that's the story that folks tell. And when that gets into communities, people see that it's a real opportunity. It's not just something that's advertised, but something that people are living and experiencing and taking advantage of that they too could take advantage of in this environment.
And St. Louis is an area, a region that we know loses population, mm-hmm. whether it's in the city limits or even outside the city. So attracting people to come here, I think, should be a goal for all of us. It is when you are trying to welcome people in, is that part of the pitch that, look, St. Louis could use you? We could be, you know, you could help us. We can help you. Is that kind of how it goes?
Yes. I mean, we talk about housing and cost of living and the advantages that St. Louis has compared to major immigration hubs on either coast. St. Louis has a competitive advantage economically to be able to make that American dream more attainable with our low cost of living and ample housing available. And that is something that the city and the region at large greatly benefits from. This is an increase in tax base, an increase in workers. When we see a declining population, it's not just overall numbers, but it's an aging population as well. Immigrants are disproportionately young and of working age and able to fill open positions that are chronically open. We work with, last year we worked with more than 130 employers to put nearly 400 folks to work. And these opportunities that this region has are ones that are very appealing for immigrants who are looking to restart their lives. And the pitch is, you know, what they can have by coming here and the opportunities that exist, but also it's about being part of something and rebuilding this region. And people have an interest in being a part of something, and they see that there are things worth investing in here in St. Louis.
Yeah, I feel like we have so much more room for immigrants to come here and help grow the community for sure. Well, in that national uncertainty now, when we're looking at the global perception of the United States and the Trump administration crackdown on illegal immigration and how that's leaked over to immigrants who are here legally, who do have visas, and how due process is being questioned here. How have you seen that affect immigrants who are in our area legally, in the St. Louis bi-state area legally?
It creates a tremendous amount of fear and apprehension. Folks, regardless of presence, know that they could be just a traffic stop away from being caught up in proceedings and immense court costs and fees that could be life-changing for them and separate them from their families. And in fact, we have our own immigration services at the International Institute, including an immigration attorney who is representing several cases of individuals who were here, admitted legally, had a legal presence in the United States, and have been caught up in this enforcement acts that have been taking place, and themselves have been separated from their families and working very hard to try to get those families reunified. What has been created, it really creates a lot of fear for everybody. And when that fear exists, it makes people reticent to send their kids to school, to access services like those available at the International Institute that can help with things like employment, things like accessing healthcare or mental health services. And when people don't access services they need, our region at large is less healthy. It's less safe because we have so many people who are afraid to access services and access resources that they're entitled to. Obviously the threat of being separated from one's family, the threat of being erroneously deported is real. And it's something that impacts people's daily lives.
So you have a podcast and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
And just as a quick clarification, if a listener is going, well, if you have your visa, why are you nervous? Well, that's the thing. Let's say you are here legally, you have your visa, and something as little as a fender bender that puts you in contact with law enforcement, if they decide it doesn't matter that you're here legally, we're moving forward, we're going to separate you without that due process. That's it. How could you not live in fear to think a speeding ticket? Anything.
Any of us would.
Yeah.
Any of us.
Yeah, I mean it's completely understandable. We have, an environment here that is really threatening to mm-hmm. individuals, and again, you could just be caught in the wrong place at the wrong time and be subject to this. But there are organizations like the Institute, like the MICA Project, like Monarch, and many other service providers within the Immigrant Service Provider Network here in St. Louis that are here to support these individuals. There are far more cases like this than really we have the capacity to support as a region in terms of providing legal assistance. But we ask that anyone who needs that assistance have access to it. And so when we talk about things like changing the system to expedite more deportations, that is a threat to the legal system. That's a threat to the way that we have always operated as a country, and it puts an incredible fear inside of all of us. It really should, because these folks who are here legally present, just like you and me, could be deported just like you and me. And that's a real big challenge. I often ask people, I say, well, if you got stopped, how would you prove that you're a citizen?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair question.
It's not something that is easily handled, but
yeah.
we're very thankful for the many resources that this region has to support the individuals who really need it this time. But we always need more folks interested in supporting in many ways. The Festival of Nations, for example, always relies on volunteers. But as an organization writ large, we rely on volunteers and supporters to help us do what we do every day.
Festival of Nations will happen August 23rd and 24th at Tower Grove Park here in St. Louis because of the International Institute of St. Louis. Blake Hamilton, we appreciate you coming in. Best of luck in moving forward, and we're very glad that this is going to go on as planned. So thank you for coming in.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
That is Blake Hamilton, the interim CEO with the International Institute of St. Louis. It's Chris and Amy on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. A new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because, like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.